Hi, and welcome to episode 3 of Fear the Swan, a Signar War Machine podcast. I'm Grant, and I no longer play Siege 1.
I'm Gibbs. I never really played a whole lot of Siege 1.
I'm Cole. I still play Halley 3.
I'm Brent, and I desperately want to pick up Siege 1.
I kind of figured you'd pick up off that after we were talking about Siege 1. So we are back from the Southern Ontario Open. All of us were there except for Brent. We had a great time. I want to thank everyone that organized and ran that event. All the events there. There was a lack of sleep, I think, by Sunday evening. Aggie and Justin looked like they just wanted to kill every single person that they talked to, because they were just exhausted from being up till 3 in the morning and then being back down there by 6:30. To Tim and everybody, it was an amazing show. If you can make it up there, I strongly suggest it. That field was such a shark tank. It was fantastic. Gibbs, Cole, you guys agree?
100%, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like the new Meg Shark, right? That's like 3 times the size of a boat.
Yep, it was quite. It was great to play into. I mean, you had basically the whole all 3 Canadian WTC teams there, plus a ton of other people. It was ridiculous. Every round you would run into somebody, and I'd be like, "Oh, great, I got Gibbs this round. Oh, next round, great, I got Brandon Andrews. This is fun." And it was. It was a blast.
Yeah. I loved how many people were able to make it from the East Coast, from the Mid-Atlantic part of the East Coast. You know, I know a lot of the New Englanders make it up there, so the New York and the New England area. But, man, we had a really good showing from Baltimore, Virginia, New Jersey, Delaware, Philly. That was awesome to see.
Yeah, completely. And we'll get into a little bit about our takeaways from that in a bit, but I think we're going to hit on the one thing everybody's probably talking about in amongst all the factions, but mostly Signar. This weekend, they did a 5.5 update to this Crucible Guard CID, in which they have made changes to Eleeps and Nemo 3. And I will go ahead and read them now, because, as Brent pointed out to me, Pagani has basically come out and said that these are going to be the changes, and I don't see anything here to make me feel otherwise. So Nemo's feat was changed to: when a friendly faction model makes an electrical damage roll against enemy model in Nemo's control range, add an additional die to the damage roll. And if you are unfamiliar, previously it was flip-flopped, so the friendly faction model only had to be in his control range, which let Nemo sit way the fuck back right outside of the kill box where he wants to be. So let's talk about that feat. Brent, I'll go ahead and start with you. What do you think besides the obvious downsides, what do you think about that change to his feat?
Personally, I don't think it changes him a whole lot. I mean, usually you are going all in on your assassination anyway. If you're playing for attrition, you don't really need the extra D6. If you're playing, I think it pushes him more into heavy metal. If you were running Storm Division, you were going to probably have Reinhold now. If you're going into heavy metal 4, combined with the other change you're going to discuss, you're probably going to just take the Squires when you're free solos, get an extra couple inches. I suspect that Squire and probably a Lancer to take advantage of Force Hammer is going to become more relevant with Nemo 3, but to be honest, I'm still looking at him strongly for my current pairing, even with this change.
Yeah, I think you could. I mean, okay, so downside is he may die more than he did, but like you said, you generally, if you were going to feat and go all in on assassination, you were probably doing that anyway. I think the bigger change would be the next one, but I'll let Cole and Gibbs start with you. Anything else on the feat?
I am a little worried about how much exposed he has to be if you're counting on that extra die for the attrition. I agree with Brent. It's not going to affect the assassination much, but one of the reasons I shy away from Nemo is that I've gotten Nemo killed way too many times throughout both Mark II and Mark III trying to play any version of Nemo. So something else that makes him less safe is not very appetizing to me. Now, what you might see, though, is that people stop teching for him because they believe that since these changes might take him out of the meta, they may not bring their answers. And that may, in a way, give him a little more freedom in terms of the list pair.
Sure. Cole, anything else on the feat before we move on to what I think is the is pretty obviously is the bigger change?
So I feel like the feat brings him in line with like casters like Orion and who's the other one that does that stuff like that?
McCain.
Yeah, or Ossian. Yeah,
it was Orion and Ossian who need to catch the opponents in their feet, and they're both control 7 as well.
Same with, like, Amalekus. Most of the damage feats, I think, work this
way. Yeah, so most of the damage feats. So I think it was, like, the change is a good change in terms that, like, he's no longer this outlier that just can feat on anything he wants. He now has to actually play the game.
Yep.
Personally.
Yeah, but the bigger change, which is far more reaching than this, is they made a change to E-Leaps, and now when a friendly faction model makes an electrical damage roll against an enemy model in Nemo's... Oh, that was the feat, excuse me. The immunity electricity rule now reads, the amount of rules and abilities... lightning cannot arc from a model with immunity electricity. Sorry, took me a while to find that. So I think that was the change we all thought was going to come when they started the immunity discussion. And then we didn't see that because they were testing some other things. But this was the change that was kind of rumored. This, I think, is the bigger change. I'm not saying it takes Nemo off the table, but if something was going to, this would certainly have been the change, not the feat change.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I'm gonna try to silver lining here. One of the things that this is gonna let us see is a little more stealth play, because I think stealth was something that was kind of scared out of the meta, and I think our electro leaps are a large part of that. And that's something that I take into consideration whenever. You know, I'm building a Siege 2 list or something with commandos. I'm thinking, okay, you know, where's, you know, how are leaps going to work, and can I play this into the mirror? And so I'm sure that occurs to most other factions. And so, you know, in terms of the health of the game, I think it may be good in terms of allowing stealth to have a place where it didn't before.
Brent, I know you were super in favor of this change, so you want to jump in?
It took just under 9 hours for my grin to go away, driving home after this one. I think it is absolutely necessary and needed. I think a smart play will get around it. I think that Nemo 3 in heavy metal with a Centurion with Arcane Shield is going to giggle uncontrollably when that Storm Strider shoots it in the back to kill your caster. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is I think it is the appropriate change that they needed to make, and it's a change I've been hoping for quite some time. I won a number of games this last year just off the strength of running a Storm when it's within 4 inches of something and killing everything within 4 inches in every direction.
Yep.
And it is, I personally feel it is very bad for the game to allow that, and it is a very good change. The other change that would have happened, and I haven't really mentioned this anywhere, is with everything else in Mark III, the only other change I could see them making was you can't attack your own models, and I'm really glad they didn't put that one in.
Yeah, I am too.
In practice, I think this literally changes one model in a Nemo 3 heavy metal list to a Centurion, and you just shrug it off. And it makes the game so much more interactive. It also means, in a hilarious way, that my second list in Signar doesn't have to be a dedicated anti-Signar drop, because otherwise I just lose when my opponent has Nemo 3.
Right. Cole, what do you got, buddy?
So speaking from Haley 3 standpoint, this is a Haley 3 buff, like, hands down. Like, Haley 3 is probably going to be, like, the best Signar, anti-Signar drop now. So with the they can't spark note into the cloud wall now. So Haley 3 has this the best. In my opinion, it's the better play as the mirror drop. And so in Signar v Signar, you'll be seeing a lot more like Haley 3 v Haley 3.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Brent was saying, I mean, let's be fair. You can still e-leap into the cloud wall. You just have to do it on a non-electrical immune model, which means that you're going to potentially take some damage. So.
And if it's a Minuteman, you can do it from 32 inches away.
Oh my God, Gibbs!
Twice. So, after how many shots does the Minuteman die to boosted damage rolls?
Well, no, only doing two with your gun. So
you're killing trenchers. You're not boosting anything.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, and feats only against enemy models, so that's not too much of an issue there. I mean, do you see a lot more? Do you think this opens up the play for other lights that you'll just go and throw Arcane Shield on instead of it being a Firefly? Or do you think it'll be something like you were saying, Brent, with a Centurion?
I personally think it'll be a Centurion. I didn't consider the Minuteman, but that's actually not a bad call either, because that can really get into some unusual spots. And, the Minuteman with Arcane Shield probably survives 4 Stormstrider shots. And any number of Fireflies.
Yes.
Yep.
And randomly does a little work when it jumps in. It could get a couple of trenchers in the mirror for you.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I don't love it, but if you have those tools, I don't want a bunch of people to do that because I don't want the Minuteman to lose ECR. So let's use it wisely, people.
also, if you're looking at using the other stuff on Nemo's list, like Force Hammer, that Minuteman looks really attractive.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, so you probably see less Fireflies, but yeah, I like the Minuteman. Not that the Centurion's not fine, but I like the Speed 6 AD Leap Minuteman over the Speed 4 Centurion, personally, but I've always liked a Centurion in Nemo's battle group, so I think that's probably a great drop in what you'll probably see a lot anyway. So do we have anything else on him? I mean, this doesn't take Nemo out of the meta, right? Like, he's still just fine.
No. I'm actively looking at him actually as a list pair for Haley 3 still. I think he changes in some of the things he does. He doesn't auto win certain matchups, but if your opponent has infantry swarm, he just goes into attrition mode and takes off all the dudes every turn.
Yeah.
I think if there's something that I'm a little concerned about, it's the double barrel nature of the nerf. Just because I think that previously, I think Michael Stone called it mad dogging. You know, when they mad dog something and nerf it 2 or 3 different ways, I think that can be a bit much. I would like to see like one change in this CID and then one change maybe in 1 or 2, just to see if they got it to the right point without both barrels. That's just a personal, I'd like to see incremental change so you know exactly what the change has accomplished. If you pull 2 levers, you can't differentiate which lever did what, right?
So I'm 100% in agreement with you, but with one of the changes, really only changing who needs to be in the control, like you didn't change the feat, you just changed where Nemo needs to be to catch models in his feet. So, like, I don't... Like, to me, that nerf is, like, very mild. So it's not like the Una 2 or the Mad Dog where you got hit in 2 different directions. Like, I don't know how... But generally, I do agree with you that I don't like seeing things get whacked on both sides.
I imagine if you played it on the table both ways, I think you would see a significant difference.
Yes, you're right.
The ranges are very, very different.
You're right. You're totally right about that. I don't mean to mitigate the change. It certainly changes some things. It's certainly a weaker feat, obviously.
Yeah.
Right? But
And I don't really have a dog in that hunt because I've not played Nemo 3. He's just not in my rotation. I haven't played him since Mark 2 because I've been working on other casters. So personally, I don't really, you know, it's not going to change my games, but, you know, just from a precedent standpoint, I think we need to get away from the multiple things changing at once so that you can't differentiate the impact of one.
Cole, anything?
I feel Nemo 3 is going to be in a fine spot. I don't know if people take him as much to a competitive standpoint. It's like with the Haley Toon nerf, that with him dropping down, people see a lot more, that we still have a good enough bench of casters that we can still play without him in the topper tier.
I did see a lot of people posting saying, like, oh, great, I don't have to take my Storm Troll anymore. And I'm thinking, like, I don't think Nemo's just going to drop off the table. If you just don't take that Storm Troll, don't you still get fucked?
Yeah, probably. Because like Nemo can still catch what he wants to catch. It's just dependent on how much he wants to now clear off with his feet.
Right. So yeah, I think all in all, I think we're all in agreement. This is a good change, right, for the game, for... obviously, it's a nerf, quote-unquote, but I think this is a change that should have happened. I mean, I can't tell you how many tables I go to, kill a bunch of shit with e-leaps, and listen to my opponent sit there and tell me how bullshit it is that I just e-leaped off my own Firefly with no repercussions and just killed, you know, wiped a whole unit off the table. And I get it. I'm not picking on them at all. Like, I understand, but so this was a good change, and we won't have to listen to that as much.
The reason gets even more pertinent when you add in Mr. King Zero to the mix. That's a segue.
Good job. Look at that.
All right, there we go. Episode 3 already picking up the skills.
Nailed it. yeah, so they released the Zero casters, and then there was some, because I don't think we've talked about them at all, but we did get Kane Zero. I'm sure by now everybody's seen it, so I'm not going to go through his entire thing, but... they removed hipfire off of him, and now you're allowed to take the character jacks bonded to the juniors, the Zero juniors. So Sorsha can take, what is it, Beasto 9? Is that her jack?
Yes.
And then Kane Zero can take Ace.
Denny can take Nightmare, yep. And...
Sevi can take Eye of Blessing of Vengeance.
Blessing.
Yeah.
Blessing.
And there's another one that got it. Iacos can take Charybdis and Black Industries.
Right. Well, he already could just because of... Oh, no, it was the other theme that they already allowed.
The other theme allowed him.
Right. Yeah, you're right. So now having Ace with Kane Zero, so you're going to pay 0 points for Kane, and then you're going to get Ace and give you a Thunderbolt, a Shadowfire, a Magic Weapon. What's the other one he has? Magic Bullet, right?
Trickshot, Shadowfire, and Thunderbolt.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think about that? Let's talk about Kane Zero and Ace being allowed.
I know you and I have been talking a lot about a Haley 2 build with Kane Zero and with Ace.
Yeah, I would do want to get into that in a minute, but I want to just talk generally about what we think about having access to snipe in lists that we didn't previously, and then having Ace in lists that we didn't previously.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to talk to you. I was going to talk to you actually, Gibbs, about Ace or snipe with like your 5x5 list. Like, would you write to drop Ion and hold for Kane Zero? Because your list already, Signar as a whole, like already shoots so far in the list that want to shoot. Yeah. So adding snipe to a range 12 like may help, but like when your army is already like range 14 to range 16 guns, yeah. Like having the snipe means like cool, I'll be in the very far back and not contest scenario at all if I want to shoot my match range.
Yeah, it doesn't really change. It doesn't really change the ranges on my 5x5 a whole lot. What it does is allow, if you do take Ace, it allows you a shadow fire with Sloan outside of Sons of the Tempest. And that's not trivial.
Not at all.
And it allows you like some trick shot, which is kind of nice. but it's really, really good for shutting down, you know, a big base, blocking all line of sight behind it. You know, it's nice to have that trick shot to kind of free that up. That said, dropping Ayana and Houghton Murdoch for it, I mean, that's... and plus freeing up some more points, that starts to take away from models that do a lot of work. So I'm not really sure that I'm going to work him into that. And I think you're going to find that in a lot of Signar lists, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, yeah, sure, it would be nice. But I don't think he's going to... He's definitely not going to be an auto include, and you may be surprised at how few times you'll reach for him.
So even with being able to snipe Sloan and have access to a Shadowfire, like, that doesn't come off to you and be like, bam, that's auto include?
So a couple points on that. That means you're cycling Refuge, right?
Sure.
Because I almost always keep Refuge on Sloan. Very few times do I switch it to another target. So that means you got to cycle that, which makes her have more focus difficulty. In heavy metal, you don't have Reinhold, so you've only got two shots anyway, even on feet. Mm-hmm. And two Karas shots are not going to take down casters that aren't just completely flapping in the breeze. So I find the assassination is a threat that most people have to respect, but in general, I'm looking to attrition anyway. So having extra tools for assassination doesn't help me with my main game plan to begin with.
Interesting.
It seems like, oh, this would be a great tool, but after I've thought about it, I'm not sure. I'll have to test it.
What about going for the attrition plan and just keeping Snipe on Kane and getting three trick shots a turn?
Yeah, I think that's a little more helpful. But you're dropping Holt's two shots, right? And Murdoch's sometimes shot. So you're really buying three, and you're having to downgrade a Minuteman to something else. The nice thing about trick shots is they're magic, and so it's great for spot removal of machine rays. Usually Gremlin Swarms are a little higher armor, so it takes a couple of those to take one down because of the death now. But it's a really great way to put pressure on solos. So I don't know. I'll have to test it out. It's not something that, you know, I haven't cleared out a slot for it yet.
What's your third free solo?
Murdoch, actually. So it's... So Squire, Murdoch, and Arlen are the free solos. So that's why even if you drop Ayana and Holt Murdoch, you've got to free up even more points because it's going to be 12 plus the free solo for Kane and Ace. So that means it's a 5x4, and then, you know, what are you going to do with the other points? And so, yeah, I'm just not really... I think Siege 1. Now Siege 1 might, you know... might like it more, or like a Haley one, you know, I could see some Haley one, some Haley two, that might really like it.
Yeah. I think Brent, you were the first person I heard from about how far a defender under Kane Zero with Haley two can reach.
Yeah. Well, so Haley two with a defender, an ace or a grenadier can do that is the really interesting thing. You can put a defender on Jake's or the Trencher guy, Trencher Jr.
Trencher boy.
Grenadier on Trencher Jr. if you're running Trencher mechanics. Or you can put Ace on Kane Zero, and you can shoot some distance into their deployment zone on turn one. It varies a little bit by specific build, but it's at least an inch in, and I think Kane can get 5 inches in if you want to go all out. At least three.
At least 3 inches was my nickname in college.
Yeah.
And,
along with just a tip.
And so there's a good battle report on the CID forums showing what your opponent's deployment looks like to account for that. And the first thing he says in the actual report, after he shows you this picture of people being deployed more than 4 inches behind anything in the front so they don't automatically die to trick shots off Ace, is And then we realized that Thunderbolt's a shot, and you can shoot and knock it down, and it's probably still in range to shoot again.
That's ridiculous.
So, I mean, when you're looking at, and now I have to deploy solos I care about 7 inches behind the front, the back of my front models.
Yeah, that's...
There's probably something wrong there.
Yeah, it's probably not okay. And a lot of people were saying, like, oh, okay, like, 2 shots. Like, how good is that? And it's like, well, it's not that it's that. We're talking about top of one. So you haven't even got a chance to do anything yet. And B, if a defender were, just theoretically, to take 2 shots at your caster, and let's just say they chip in 5-8 damage, that's a completely different game that you now have to play against a gunline or into a Signar list. Like, you now don't get to play the game you want to play with your caster. Is that correct? Fair? Like,
yeah. It's...
I mean, no, it's not fair.
No, I mean, but that's a fair assessment. Fair. Yeah.
Or it's, here's 2 shots on your Warlock turn one, and, you know, your Warlock may not have taken any damage, but you're going to have 2 beasts that are going to be down, you know, 10 to 12 health apiece.
Mm-hmm.
And their caster has to cut turn one to fuel back up. It's just...
So the only...
It's,
go ahead.
Yeah. I was like, it's just... It's not good.
No.
And it really puts questions on what do you want to do for the rest of the game and positioning-wise. On top of that, new players are going to hate it. Just, they're going to absolutely hate it. And B, the argument of, well, then you've got to extend yourself and you've got to do with this special gimmick list. And I'm like, it's really not that gimmicky. You're talking about using so many resources like 1 junior and 1 jack.
Yeah, and what am I losing? It's turn one. I don't lose that jack in retaliation.
Ace may not have to stealth because he's going to be shooting from
18 inches away.
Yeah.
Defender is going to be shooting from 20.
Yeah, like, what am I losing? That defender's not going to die. I lost nothing to take those shots.
But on the argument, we've had that Haley 2 and Jake's interaction for, it was like, how many months? 9, 10 months, maybe?
Jake's by yourself can't do it.
No, but Jake's with Haley 2, before Hunters got changed, could always get you into the 80 line. And that was there for a long time, if I recall, before it got changed.
It was, and they changed it on the third CID they did, the Signar one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not, I mean, it was not fun for new players either.
So, Brent, do you think that this, so the only thought that I had is maybe they go change Snipe and make it to Snipe for only a model in his battle group. Is that something you could see happening, or do you think this is just, they're just going to be like, here it is, fucking deal with it?
Well, so I have 2 answers. A, I think that Snipe in his battle group doesn't solve the problem. I think that they need to just make Steamroller 18, you can't shoot into your opponent's deployment zone on 1A, just across the board.
Yeah.
But B, I think they're going to release it in basically the version we see now.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be a great change. I think that's something that's been taught. Just, you can't make attacks on top of turn one, right? Like, is that a thing? Or just not
attack or just enemy inside models. You can't attack enemy models at the top of one. I think that I really would like to see that change, because what I don't want is for Kane Zero to come out and that limit what we can have as far as model design, because I really, it's frustrating that Hunters lost AD because of the potential for top of one. And I think that was a big motivation, correct me if I'm wrong, was that particular interaction with Jakes and Haley too.
That was the stated reason.
Yeah. And so I don't want to have to, you know, have our models essentially pay this snipe tax, you know, in terms of, you know, what they can have and what they can't. And I like AD as a rule. I like AD models. I don't want to see more models go out of AD just because of Kane Zero. I don't think he's that important to the faction. I don't think having Snipe on a stick is all, you know, I mean, it's fine, but we've played with Snipe for a lot of other casters. It doesn't break the game, you know. In general, I don't think it will, but I don't want to see it get us more nerfs or more, you know, make them hesitant to give us other tools.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, I don't think we're going to see another nerf until the circle CID. It's only every second CID.
Oh, that's true. So we'll get one break and then we'll have another nerf.
Yep.
Okay, great. Do we have anything else on Kane Zero, Ace themselves? I mean, I will say that those options, bringing Shadowfire in and Thunderbolt, does excite me. I mean, you've now added, if you took Ace on Kane, you've got two Thunderbolts, or three, I guess, because Kane has two weapons. That kind of control is something that I think we've been missing without not playing Haley too much lately. I'm sure there's a lot of places for it. Go ahead, Brent.
I think he's a very flavorful caster. I like the design. I personally feel he is the third strongest junior, and I will play him in heavy metal behind everything
Denny
not named Denny.
Sevi. Yeah. Oh, you don't think
it's
Denny?
No, I think Denny is probably the weakest. Parasite on a stick, even with a free Night Rich for the junior, is still a focus for Parasite. And of the Black Industries casters that are currently in the meta, she can only run with one of them,
right.
Gatsby 3,
right,
who probably doesn't need the damage buff.
No, and loses what, a Slayer and some support for her, basically?
He has to trade Ironmongers out,
is
the problem.
Okay.
I think Sorsha Zero is insane, though. And it makes me want to dig out my Kador on some level.
Don't you say that.
Look, all I'm saying is...
You take
Strack off one and a 22-inch non-linear threat range.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty
good. That's
gross.
Literally going around the building you hit your caster behind.
Stupid.
Also, the thought of watching my regular Crix opponent pop feet on Skari, Skari 1's feet on a Wraith engine, and still losing it with a focus left to spare. I see a lot of armor stacking feats in the Midwest. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, right. So you don't need to play Kator. You have enough of that. So you just stay where you're at.
No. You're confusing playing Kador and playing Strakov 1. It's two entirely different things. It's playing top of two versus playing a game.
Yeah. All right, do we have anything else on them, or are we ready to move on?
I would say that I suspect that some of the other ones, if you're actually worried about them, it looks like they're taking a very close eye on them going forward.
Yes.
We already saw Sevi toned down quite a bit. So
fucking good. He was a 15-15 with 5 focus, Eye of Menoth, and Oracular Vision. This is ridiculous.
That seems pretty good.
He was, in fact, a better combat solo than anything in the game, including Acosta.
We were literally in the car because we had walkie-talkies, and we were playing who is better Sevi Zero or X. And we just went through and
they're comparing casters.
Yeah, and we weren't factoring in special rules on their you know, weapons or whatever. But more often than not, the answer was actually Sevi Zero. It was quite ridiculous. We did have one thing, and Brent, I don't think we necessarily got your thoughts. So Cole and I were talking about Haley 2 with a Hurricane. And then we took a Stormclad and then was like, so if we take Kane Zero with Ace, we get access to 3 Thunderbolts. We get a Shadowfire, not a huge deal into the Slayer spam. But now we have a Hurricane that's threatening, that can shoot 3 knockdown shots at 16 inches. Do we think, because Black Industries, as we'll get into a little bit, the Slayer list is a list we've all agreed is an issue for us right now. Will that potentially have any game, or is the Hurricane still a liability?
I personally haven't tested it. Knee-jerk is that I really want the Stormclads to take out 3 heavies feet on the other six and shift clock. And I don't know if the Hurricane can do as much damage as two Stormclads.
Right.
But it does some control. Part of me says it does some control on the way in. The other part of me says it doesn't matter because on the way in means turn 1B.
Yeah, and that was another thing I thought about after I went back and rewatched the Chris Orr versus Bubba Dalton game. It was like, Bubba was across the zones, the rectangular zones on, I think they were playing the pit 2 on turn 1. And then that doesn't matter. So you have to go first or it's almost irrelevant. And even then, I'm not sure if it matters.
If I recall the math correctly, you're at the 25-inch mark on 1A.
Yeah, that sounds right.
There's not a lot that can keep up with that.
Yeah.
And if we had Haley's old feet where you didn't have to roll D3 plus 5? Sounds right.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
You might have a better chance, but when you're having to choose between do I shut down that Arknote or that Slayer... she's going to get squishy quick.
Yep. No, it was just something we were playing around with last night when we were talking about answers into that list and where to start. And we were like, well, maybe Haley 2. And then was like, well, I don't know, sniped Hurricane. 3 knockdown shots seems like a decent start because that's one less focus that the Slayers all have. And we kind of just went from there.
The interesting thing is that if you can set it up properly... you can actually shoot from outside of his control area. So right. Even if he feats to heal, you maybe kill him while he's still... even if he feats for the heal D3 every time you spend a focus?
Right.
You can shoot him outside of his control range.
His control range is only 14.
Yes.
And the Hurricane with Snipe is 16. So yeah, if you get the one crit knockdown shot is key, and then you can just like boost damage on the others.
Yeah, I don't know.
However, the push is a must, right? It's not a may.
It is a must.
It's a must. So you got to be a little. If you're trying to stay out of his feet, that's dancing a little close. Unless for some reason he has something up on the other side of his base.
Yeah.
Correct. It's going to be a positioning game, and you're going to have to get a little lucky, I suspect.
Yep, probably.
So that covers the updates, right?
Yep, I think that's everything for now. So we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some stuff we all took away from the meta, looking at it from a Signar perspective going forward. So, Brent, you'll start with you, because you were at Adepticon quite recently. So, what did you take away as far as what are we looking at Signar and being like, what the fuck? Like, what's our problem matchups right now in the meta?
Slayer spam can be, just because it's a lot of boxes. I think the bigger pair, and one was not at Adepticon, one is Brett Fogel's winning list, Maelok. Dude spam is a legitimate concern for me right now. Def 14 and arm 18 to 20 on the way in, assuming you don't melee them. And 8 boxes is a lot to chew through. The second one is a variation on that. I suspect you're going to see a rise in Legion heavy infantry next month.
Yep.
If I recall the release schedule. Animag and Chosen were not at Adepticon, or at least Animag was not.
Yeah, Chosen weren't either, I don't believe, right?
I don't remember. I know Jake seemed a little sad that Animag wasn't available to run her.
Yeah, they're not in War Room, so I believe...
I don't believe the Chosen were available either.
I don't think
either.
They were there.
Yeah. I mean, by the time I got to the store, they weren't, and I don't think they ever were.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not in War Room, so they weren't released.
Yeah.
but high arm box spam. He was not playing Signar during Mark II Meat Mountain days, but I'm assuming it was also less than pleasant at that time.
Yeah, if I recall, I didn't see a lot of that. We didn't have a lot of Trolls players locally when Meat Mountain, and I wasn't traveling competitively a lot. So, but I don't believe so.
It does make me want to dig out Siege 1, even though the answer always feels like it's not Siege 1. I have not great luck with him.
Yeah, it depends on what the arm skew gets up to, because the box skew is not generally a problem. It just, once you start stacking armor after you have it, it does start, it gets to a point when you aren't making enough attacks to be able to reliably kill enough dudes. You can kill plenty, but sometimes you just can't kill enough. Like, I'm not sure about the Maelok answer with Siege. Your list is obviously significantly different than mine. You're looking at Gravediggers versus Heavy Metal, so you have a lot more of attacks than I did. I'd have to play it, but I certainly agree about the Maelok Gator spam being a problem for us, especially because they can have, if their other list is like Barnabas 1 with a Dracodile, that also kind of sucks. So,
yeah. Now, yeah, I don't have a great, like I said, I don't have a great answer for either of those right now. I'm wondering if my answer right now is just dodge.
Yeah.
I don't hate that answer as much. Minions is a less played faction.
Right.
So, like in Mark 2, okay, I may auto lose to, Raven, Mage Hunter, Assassin spam, but I play in the Midwest and not on the East Coast, so that one rep player in the tournament may lose round 1, 2, or 3. So.
Yep. Plus, Ireland never played Raven, so you didn't have to worry about that.
I didn't meet him until Mark 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, Cole, you've played Haley 3 basically exclusively since Mark 3. What, I mean, she doesn't feel like a great drop into either of those. How do you feel?
Into Crix?
No, well, into the Slayer spam and the Maelok Gator spam specifically.
So I haven't had the chance to play her into either, which I'm hoping I'm going to get some like really good practice in on this Saturday, actually, for the Slayer spam and see what works and what doesn't work. But with the Maelok spam, I feel like this Long Gunners and Kiss can just do enough damage where he has to feat early. But I feel like that game really goes down to who rolls first will just basically has like the better advantage to win, because like they get the more board position. Or like if Haley goes second, she has to kind of worry about where she's going to end up. Where like if she was going first, she can just like run up the field and then the Long Gunner is set up turn two for all the juicy shooting.
So what's in your list?
It's Haley 3 Grenadiers, Ion and Holt with UA, Max Long Gunners, UA, Min Infantry, UA, Double Buster, Finn, Ragman, Hitch, Express Gunner, a Double Express Team.
Patrol Dog.
And the Patrol Dog. All the solos and 3 Grenadiers. Basically, with Ion and Holt.
You're taking the dog? Sorry.
Yeah, so I feel like just with the terms of shooting, like if I get Kiss off, it's just a lot of boost to Pal 15s because Haley can support the focus it takes, and if with melee, I just won't let baby Haley make any attacks because they're pointless until after feet.
Yeah, okay. The Force Hammer she does is about the relevant one.
But you can only use. I only feel like you can use Force Hammer on feet because if they pop Consummate at all, then you're like, I need 10 to hit you.
Yeah,
unboosted. So I don't like Force Hammer on her unless you're popping feet or unless it's something really easy to hit with, then that's fine. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I saw a good more of those lists than I thought I would. So I'm also of the mindset. I mean, Black Industries is just getting more popular, so I think that one's a complete legit threat. The Minions ones, I think, probably depends on your meta, but certainly is a list we have to think about. I mean, armor and box skew right now is the hotness, and I think that's something that we struggle with outside of, like you said, if you can outplay someone with Haley 3, but I don't have the confidence in, say, myself to be able to do that. Cole, you may be able to.
And so I was talking to, yeah, that's like one of the big things. I was talking to like Mac McWaters at the Sioux, and we were asking like what his game plan for like Denny 2 was into Haley, and he just straight up said clock.
Yeah. Yeah, I did find that conversation really interesting, that he was just basically, you have to play a perfect game clockwise, because I'm going to be taking 2 3-minute turns, and the second that you either mess up or take too much time, you probably lose.
Or Haley gets assassinated because you're being desperate because you're low on clock.
Yeah. But I did find that interesting. Anything else you saw at the Sioux, Cole, that you were just like, huh, this is probably a problem?
I don't know. Actually, for the Champions format, like, Champions is very new to me still, and I copied my two lists. One was the Crave for Centurions from ours truly, Anthony Gibbs, and that was, I had so much fun with playing. And the other was the Siege 2 I was talking, I kind of like stole off of Jake from the UK, because I've never played Siege 2. And both of them were really interesting. And the Cray list, I felt like, in the Champions format, has a really nice place, because it just, not a lot counters it in Champions, which felt really nice. Mm-hmm. Just being oppressive in how it played. With the actual Sioux format, I enjoyed playing Haley 3 two of the four games, and I didn't have as much trouble as I thought I would with her. Doesn't look like a lot of people are still like teching against Haley 3 as much.
Or at least not ready for her.
Mm-hmm.
So Gibbs, you're not playing Haley 3, so let me jump over to you. What did you either see, or first of all, let's take the list you're playing, which is Sloan and then the Cray with the Centurions. How do you feel into either of the two lists that we talked about?
Yeah, good point. So one thing is that I don't think that we should say, you know, just lump Black Industries as one thing. Because I think it's very, very different whether you're talking about a Denny 2 Black Industries versus a Gaspy 3-9 Slayers Black Industries.
Totally fair. You're right.
Yeah, because the magic weapon difference between, Denny 2, like, if you don't have enough magic weapons and you're relying on shooting, I mean, that's pretty much a crippling, unwinnable game, in my opinion. Not as lopsided as it gets in this game. Also, if you're doing a dedicated gun line, obviously you can't play into 9 Slayers effectively. So the Carapace really, really, really is a hard counter. I know that Will Pagani, you know, posted, wow, you can play around it. I disagree. I think Carapace as a theme force benefit on all heavy jacks means that they have a brutal list chicken advantage, because you really cannot drop your range list. And that's a big, big chunk of the game. So now, however, you know, when you take a look at Maylock, actually Kara Sloan is probably my favorite list into Maylock, because the Gators don't get unyielding as a bonus against ranged attacks. Depending on when they feat, I've found that Kara Sloan works pretty well against defensive feats, and I think that Maylock has to use the feat fairly defensively. And so if you are patient and take the Minutemen in on feat when they're not feeding, I think you remove a whole lot of pieces, because essentially you're dice off 4 on your Minuteman shots. And you have a lot of them, and then you're dice off, I think it's like dice off, 5 or so on the hunters. Cause they start at 16 and go to 18. So it would be dice off 4 as well.
Yep.
So essentially you just put 27 dice off 4 shots into them, and then boost to taste, plus whatever damage you get done with flak field. And I think that's probably is going to be pretty crippling. But I have been testing it. Actually, I did a test game with a variant of the Cray list today, just to see how it played into it. And actually, Centurions with Cray do okay as well. you got to be careful. And I, you know, I'm still figuring out what is a more viable drop, but I feel pretty good about either, actually.
So did you see anything up there, any lists that we maybe hadn't seen, or was there any realizations you had where you were like, oh shit, like this is just a problem, or other than the things that we talked about?
So one of the things that everybody needs to really be comfortable, if you're going to play competitively right now, and this is a testament, if you see like Matt McWatter's got two champions first place in a row, right? Adepticon and the Sioux. And that's not an accident. I mean, one, he's a very, very good player. And two, he's playing Denny 2 most of the time. And I think Denny 2 and Black Industries, you know, with Five Slayers and Deathjack and the Ironmongers and then some Art Nodes and other assorted bits. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic list. And because you can't play shooting into it, because it outthreats most melee armies, and because it has the incorporeal once a game, you know, I get to do a lot and probably you don't get to reprise against it. I think that makes it right now one of the more ball busting lifts. And so everybody should have a plan for it, and everybody should know, which list they're going to drop and how they're going to play it. I don't believe you can play gun lines in it at all. I played Sloan into it to try it out, and I was very close to drawing dead, aside from some trickery, you know, trying to do the unexpected and get pieces where they weren't, where Matt wasn't really expecting it. But it really shuts down most things. And so that in itself makes it a strong list. However, the Crix player can also pair that with, you know, Slaughter Fleet or Dark Host or Ghost Fleet, and it makes it really, really strong, because the types of things that can play against Denny 2 typically aren't going to be what you want to drop into a Satixis Horde, you know, that can feedback you to death or just overrun you on the table. So right now, I think a lot of mental energy should go into preparing for the Crix pair.
No, I think that's totally fair. We're kind of right back where we were when Ghost Fleet and Dark Host got popular, where it was like, they complement each other so well, and you need two totally different lists to deal with them, that it's a struggle. And I mean, if you're ready for Black Industries and then they drop Satixis, or you're ready for Satixis and you get Dark Host, like it's really different right now, where we're just like, all right, what's Crix playing? Let's fucking, cause you know, Signar and Mark II traditionally, we didn't have as much of a problem. And now we're just like, oh, well, Crix just fucks us. Let's figure this out.
The problem is that not really, you know, I can't stress this enough. Having Carapace on all the heavies, it basically gives a trump card during the list chicken process. Mm-hmm. It really, really does. Against Signar. I don't know about other factions and how they think about their list pair, but traditionally a Signar list pair has a shooting heavy list, at least one. And then the other one tends to be either combined arms or melee focused. Correct me if I'm wrong. But that means you really can't drop one of your lists. And that's a bad, I think in a two list format, that is bad for the game. You know, but I'm pretty biased because I love Sloan. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of people out there are saying, of course you don't like Carapace. But, you know, my buddies, they actually even troll me just by saying Carapace all the time, just because they know I feel pretty strongly about it. Yeah, so right now you really have to be aware of what that's going to be like, because you're going to play someone that's playing Crix and they're going to have a BI list.
Yep. No, I think that's fair. Brent, anything on all that?
Everything you said about Denny 2 is true, and you need to play against it if you haven't. I got my first experience against it over the weekend, and I moved up Siege on 1A, and my opponent almost had an assassination on 1B with Deathjack.
Was bad.
And the only reason he didn't was because the models he would have to charge would take him out of line of sight of Siege, and Hellmouth wouldn't fix it, and he couldn't get an angle to get the Hellmouth to work, because I blocked Siege in with a rocket turret that was better lucky than good.
Better be lucky than to be good, am I right, guys?
Like, literally, my opponent and I spent like 15, 20 minutes working it out, and there was no way he could actually get to me. And he was off by like a quarter of an inch in every direction.
Wow.
So, if you haven't played against it, it's a lot better than it seems like on paper. It sheath threats for up to 22 inches for perspective.
Yeah, sheath threats forever. And however many magic weapons you think you have, it's not enough to deal with a bunch of heavies with carapace that are incorporeal.
Just, like, iron hole doesn't solve your problem.
No, it's not enough.
And to be honest, if you don't have a good Krix player in your area to practice against, find a good Mark II Legion player who played Saren and just have him proxy.
Yep.
And you'll realize how miserable it is.
Yep.
Agreed.
So I know it's early testing, but for anybody that's listening that's maybe thought about that, do we have any early leads on who we think is the answer into that, who we're going to start playing with and testing?
So actually, Cray, Four Centurions, and Sons can play with it. It's about as even a match as I've seen.
Into the Denny 2 list, you're saying?
Yes, yeah. Right. And depending on their Denny 2 list, like, for instance, if you play against, like, Brandon Andrews' build, which doesn't quite have as many heavies, but has more like more overlords and kind of more more support. I think the Kray list does really well. And I think against the like McWaters version, it's it has equal game, I would say. I think it's about anyone's game. And so I'm currently testing some tweaks to the Kray list. That I'm not, it's actually Brent came up with the initial idea. I've tweaked it a little bit, and but we're not ready for prime time on that yet because I want to do some more testing. But it so far so good. I think that it might actually have some legs.
Nope. That's totally fair. I have not really started messing around with that yet. But that's probably the next thing I'm going to start looking at. I mean, like I said, Cole and I kind of talked about the Haley 2. That was more geared with the Night Slayers, though, not the Denny 2 version. Although I did talk to Brandon, and he agreed that his list is shit, and he's putting more heavies in. So don't get too comfortable with seeing that list.
No, agreed. Yeah. I'm just saying, depending on how they build it, if they only build with three heavies, I think it's a great matchup. If they build with more, I think it's a fair matchup. But from the Krix perspective, I talked to Drew Brantley, one of our Krix players here, who just recently switched to Krix, still believes that Haley 2, depending on the build, can be a very uphill climb for Denny. So Haley 2 still has that ability to counter, you know, a very tricky list. But I also want to second what Brent said about the threat range with Denny, because we did see Brandon Andrews, I think it was bottom of 2, kill Old Witch right at her deployment zone in melee with Deathjack. She was like just out of the kill box, and he got a Deathjack on her and killed her in melee. I was like, okay, that's pretty extreme.
Woof.
Yeah.
To be honest, that could have been top of 2.
Yeah, it might have been. I think it was turn 2, and it was just like, it was soul crushing, I'm pretty sure, because the player had screened with a bunch of heavies, but Deathjack just becomes incorporeal and runs in and beats her to death.
So, also, when you're doing your Denny 2 testing, legitimately ask yourself, what happens if my opponent just goes incorporeal turn 1A and runs 14 inches at me, camping 7?
Yep.
That really... That's one of those things, like, you go, oh, that's a thing you can do. Huh. That's That's not good.
It's really hard to deal with.
I think, and then I could be wrong because I was quite drunk most of the weekend, but I think when we were talking to Matt, I think I asked him about that, about like what type of list would he not want to see, and I think Haley 2 was one of the casters that came up that they were just like, I really think Haley 2, I don't think the list is there yet, but I think Haley 2 is probably the best answer. And I'm
Haley 2 something for sure.
So I think that's something to start playing with. Go ahead, Brent.
From my perspective, I'm looking at more of how I'm still looking at Haley 2 because I think it's just a great Crix drop right now in general, which sounds weird. And I'm also looking at reevaluating how I play the Haley 3 matchup into it with an eye towards just going for assassination. And that's difficult for me because I very rarely kill casters. But I need to just look at it in terms of, okay, I'm going to move towards you and either you kill me or I kill you.
A couple last things, and then we'll go ahead and get out of here. Brent, you guys are back recording Muse on Minis again, correct?
We are. In fact, I recorded, I think we're calling it Season 3, Episode 2, last night, and that'll go live sometime.
I listened to the first episode. It was very enjoyable. It was good to have you guys back, so.
We will be cycling through some guests, I believe. I'm not positive on the specifics. I'm not actually sure that's been made public anywhere. So, okay.
Heard it here first. But I just wanted to point that out. I listened to the first episode, and I enjoyed it, and I was really glad to have you guys back. So, and then one other thing. There was something else, and it is now escaping me. Oh, I remember. We had a good laugh, but it was almost like a very panicked laugh when we were reading your boy Brett Fogel's reports on whatever the fucking battle engine caster is
for
Crucible Guard. Yeah.
McKay.
Because none of the things she can do are okay.
What is this?
So there was there is a thread on the CID forums called McKay Assassinates a Faction. Let me just hit the high points. The list is Vulcan. They're Colossal, two battle engines. Their battle engine caster, Herney and Johnny with their ranking officer, and the current build uses Anastasia. The previous one used Elish for Puppet Master. I believe Anastasia is the stronger play of them because it gives you +2 to go first instead of +1. The list basically runs forward turn one, with the exception of McKay herself, who only moves up 11 total inches, and then turn two kills you.
Yep.
It has somewhere between like a 75% and 90% chance to kill basically every caster in Crix, and that was before he did live testing when he was just running the numbers for the big guns and not realizing just how many sprays she can actually get on you. On top of that, I asked him in a PM, I said, well, what about stuff like Terminus? And he says, well, I wouldn't know. The one time I played Terminus, I killed every model within 3 inches of him.
Yep, but he killed, I think, butchered 3. On full camp, on top of 2?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, your caster is going to be stationary by her second spray because she is rat 6 and boosting. But before she shoots the sprays for the crit stationary, she's going to shoot you with her big gun, which has flare at rat 8 boosted PAL 15 auto boosted damage.
Yep.
Then two crit stationary sprays. The Vulcan can also do a bunch of work in there, to get rust going or various other things. She has a gun that instead of flare is, it can also be remove incorporeal. The Vulcan can remove immunities if that matters. It's just a ton of damage.
I just remember I was crying it was partly laughter and partly tears of fear. When we were reading one of the reports and he said that like he killed somebody but still hadn't activated like both the battle engines, like only McKay and the Vulcan had gone, and it was bad. I encourage everyone to read it because It was quite entertaining to listen to, at least, but I was scared a little bit.
So, legitimate question for you. Just think this through. I have a 40-box ARM 20 caster camping, call it one, I think, in front of your army. It has at least one or two shield guards, I think, off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that that caster lives, which is not an unreasonable assumption against most things in the game, if I go in on your caster with a PAL 15 and two PAL 14s and a PAL 12, all boosted to hit, all boosted damage, will your caster survive? If the answer is no, that means that she didn't activate anything outside of his caster.
That's so fucked up. It's not okay.
And you're probably sitting there going, well, what if I put stuff in front of my caster?
Doesn't matter.
Like a screen. Well, three of those guns are sprays. Well, what if I put stuff right in front of your caster? Well, she still has bulldoze.
It's all bad. It's terrible. You really should go read it, because it's really concerning for everybody. She kills everything.
I played this game through literally all of Mark II. I didn't take a single break. I took a break in Mark I for World of Warcraft. But this is something that where I'm conflicted between. I can fit my entire army in a battle foam backpack comfortably because it's only four huge bases.
Right.
And maybe I should just take some time off this game for a while. That's how bad she is.
Yep.
And Fogle, for the record, Fogle started testing her when he lost his caster on the top of two. He lost Maelok sitting on a hill with spiny growth, feet, and death pact camping four. So he was a 14-23 caster,
yep,
camping four on a hill with 17 boxes.
So he lost to her, and that when he was like, maybe this isn't okay.
He gave a list on CID of the rules that you'd have to take off to fix her.
Yeah.
And it was like five different rules.
Yeah.
That being said, there was a dev talk today. They touched on several things that were relevant to this cast, one of which was they will be doing internal testing to balance things like McKay after the CID before it goes live. I believe they actually commented on a longer internal testing period than normal, I think, for this one. They said it was several weeks. Another thing was that they realized that shooting into deployment zones is not necessarily a good thing for the game. And a third thing they touched on was that they want to... Fogle is 100% correct in the testing he did before I say this. But they don't like to see tournament reports that reinforce what you went in saying was going to happen. They want you to do tournament reports that actually do that test to show that was the results of your testing. I don't see any possible way, how that being said, that you can go into a game against McKay with anything other than this is going to blow up your caster, and then have that reinforced with, oh, look, it's turn two. I don't know how you get usable data out of that.
Right. Yeah, that's tough. But he did get good feedback. He wrote up very, very detailed reports, and they were like, great. This is a great job. So I thought that was cool, too.
They did a rewind, and Fogle did a rewind on his models in literally one game where he didn't realize Deathjack's threat and McKay was in it by like an inch. And so they're like, well, what if I'm just like 2 inches back? Oh, well, then you just kill my caster turn two. Like, that was literally the answer. And they rewound repeatedly all of his opponents for positioning. Well, what if you put your caster here? What if you put him on this side of the...
Still died.
It didn't matter.
Nope.
There was one game that went to turn three.
Gibbs and Cole are awfully silent over there.
I'm just bewildered by this.
Yeah, I was just like, oh man, can Sloan get her before she gets her?
I don't think so, buddy.
Probably not. Yeah.
38 boxes, I think, on a caster and armor 19 camping She's going to spend 4, so she's camping 2.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. We'd have to roll it out.
and I think she's going to have at least 1 shield guard.
And is she in the theme that lets it double shield guard?
No. Okay. If you take her in the other theme, you get +1 to go first and access to mercs, which gives you artillerist for your flare gun.
Oh.
And Anastasia for an additional +1 to go first.
Oh, good. All right. So it's all terrible. It's settled.
It's all terrible.
Great. All right. Well, I think we're going to end on that high note of positivity for the game. Next week, we're going to have a special guest. Cole, you want to talk about that for a half a second, and then we'll get out of here?
Yeah, so next week, we'll be bringing on Jake Wilstrop. He won BonesCon back in February, and he's also part of the English WTC team.
Yep, so we're going to bring him on, and we'll talk Signar with him, and anything else that comes up probably in the next couple weeks. So for all of us here, I'm Grant.
I'm Cole.
Brent.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Good job, guys. We'll get it one day. It's fine.